we're back, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Not Another Interview Show podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Green, and it's great to be back. With me today is my guest from Showtime's Kidding. It's Dan Garza. Dan, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. Great. Good to talk to you, Tyler.
Yeah, no kidding. So how'd you get into puppeteering?
You work your way from the back of the puppet to the front. You know what? I'd been on stage for ever and started writing and directing and things like that probably 20 years ago, a little bit more than that. And there are certain roles that just aren't capable to be pulled off by people from an aesthetic point of view. So I started building puppets and things like that and did that for a long time. And then went into animation and had put, I guess, puppets and puppeteering and all of that on the back burner for a long time and decided, you know, production was the way to go. And I did that for a long time. Then I ended up at the Walt Disney Company about 4 years ago. Yes, I was there for about 6 years and worked with them. And content creation and curation and digital distribution.
What were some of the projects you work on with Disney?
A lot of the projects were all online. So it was part of their interactive thing. So it was, if they had a tent pole for a particular product or a particular event or something that was coming up, then we would build and create video content on their Oh My Disney platform, or it would be Star Wars or Marvel or things like that. And what's funny is that what started off as sort of an endeavor to do something sort of, contemporary and almost cheeky to a certain extent, ended up in like Wreck-It Ralph 2 as a whole thing, which was weird.
Yeah, that was really insane. Like, say what you want about Ralph Breaks the Internet, but it's really amazing how they got all that world building into that one movie.
Absolutely.
Some are gonna say that it dates the movie, but I think it's like a testament to, you know, what social media was at the time and how it's still growing.
I think that happens with anything that we're building or creating. I mean, even if you try to make it evergreen, like you would think, oh well, classic cinema. It's Citizen Kane, it's Godfather, it's, there are all these elements, and how is that going to play in 20 years or Apocalypse Now or something like that?
Yeah.
And it may not translate immediately to the audience that's there, but if it's done properly, that it doesn't even matter. Our job, and I talked about this with Catherine Keener while we were shooting Kidding, our job as entertainers, as working in the entertainment business, is that we are the archivists of the human experience and human emotion in any given situation. And so we try to truthfully and at times comically capture those moments that people are having. And if we do our job properly, then people can actually connect with what we're doing, with what we're saying, in an honest, true way. I mean, you watch episode 5, season 2, and it's all puppets, with the exception of Jim, Judy, Catherine, and Ariana, and it still resonates, even though they're puppets, even though they are fictional characters that are being manipulated by another person. You still connect with them on a certain level because underneath that or attached to that is a person who's living in the moment and is truthful about it. And that's what makes acting work.
I was going to ask about that specific episode, which we'll get to later, but I do want to ask, how did you get involved with the show itself, Kidding?
I auditioned. It was weird. I have two agents. One is on camera and voiceover, and the other one does puppeteering. And my on camera contacted me and said, hey, there's this opportunity to perform on camera. There's some puppetry involved. And would you be interested? And I said, yeah, I mean, sure. Why the hell not? And it turns out that it was the opposite. So I had to ended up, it was a thing with my agents that I had to talk to them and negotiate and all of that. But long story short, I went in, auditioned, and I treated it as one of those auditions that I'm not going to get. So what I'm going to do is enjoy myself. I'm going to make myself laugh, and hopefully the casting agent as well, and see what happens. And she had a really great time, apparently. and so then they asked me for a self-tape. At the end of it, it was closer to the line, and things were really, really rushed.
And did you specifically – keep going.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, did you specifically audition for the role of Ennui?
Well, here's the thing. They were – I think it was a scattergun at the beginning. So the initial audition was basically three different characters. And I believe that mine were – it was definitely Ennui, Secret Chef, who's played by Mike Quinn, who is an amazing puppeteer and performer. If you know Star Wars, he plays Nien Nub, the guy that pilots with Lando Calrissian.
Really?
Yeah, he's like, that's Mike. And Mike goes way back. He goes way back to like working with Jim Henson, which is amazing.
Wow. And yeah.
Fantastic puppeteer. And
I would have to assume that there definitely was sort of a Jim Henson connection with the show.
Yeah, there is too. And we can jump into that in a little bit. Yeah. There totally is. So Mike is fantastic as Secret Chef. And then Cy the Fly was another one of the characters that I auditioned for, and that was played by Christian Anderson, who is again a fantastic puppeteer. He's a brilliant singer and performer, and he builds puppets and things like that. He's a great guy, and I'm glad. I'm so happy that he got the part, because most of the time he ends up in one of those blue morph suits. So although that's part of our gig, he's much more comfortable in it than I am, because I look like pre-workout Mr. Incredible when I wear those.
So. Yeah, because you can definitely see the pictures of the behind the scenes, and it looks insane compared to what's on screen.
That one shot of us in the forest performing on Wii. There's three of us to make him walk. Anyway, so I auditioned for a couple of different critters. And took in three puppets and then built a fourth one in the car, because I believe in getting everywhere super early, especially in our industry, because you can never tell when someone's going to bail or schedule's going to change. So I always end up showing up to set anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours early, just so I can decompress and be ready and study, or maybe grab a little crafty while I'm there, or whatever it is.
And it shows you're dedicated too. So,
well, I mean, it's my job, so yeah. I have to take it totally seriously. And so I got to the audition about an hour and a half early, and was going to do Cy with this little lamb puppet that I had built a long time ago. They said, yeah, just bring in your own puppets and blah, blah, blah. And so I said, oh, well, hell, I'm doing three different characters. Let me bring in three different critters. So it's not just the voice that's changing, but it's also, the persona of the character. And I'm sitting in the car and I'm thinking, oh, well, Cy is going to speak like this or something like that. And then I thought, there's that little voice in the back of your head that's like, do better, be better. And I said, okay, shoot, man. So I went to a grocery store.
I know that.
Yeah, I picked up some ping pong balls, and they had these little sewing kits. So I picked up ping pong ball, and in the sewing kit were some buttons and some elastic. And in my car, I just happened to have had, because I was preparing for something else, I happened to have had a hot glue gun. And so I built these little eyeballs, these little what we call peepers, that were tight enough to sit on the tip of my middle finger, and then the other fingers were used like feet. And I said, oh, yeah, that feels much better. I feel more confident going in and giving them a visual on something. And just had a hoot. I had a fantastic time. And then they called back and they said, oh, yeah. My agent called me. At first I thought I had pissed somebody off, because she said, I don't know what you did in there.
Oh, sorry. Oh boy.
I'm so sorry. But she said they absolutely loved you and they want to see more. So I said, okay, cool. The next week, she sends me an email saying, hey, they want to see a self-tape no later than 1 o'clock. And it was like 11:45 or something like that. And no one was home. And the script that they had sent was, the whistling scene that you see in episode, I don't remember what the episode is, but season one, where Anhui is trying to whistle.
Is that the one where Jim Carrey does the little dance routine?
That's later on. That's with Snaggle or with Soap Scum. I don't remember where that is. But now this is where Anhui is, he can't whistle because his tongue is made of cheese and he's standing behind the Trifle Tower, which is also made of like baguettes and croissants and things like that, which in my mind as a performer, I always go back to why is that so precious? And in my twisted little brain, this has nothing to do with Dave. But I always felt that the Trifle Tower was made with the bodies of his ancestors. And so I have to justify things in my head. I mean, he lives in this thing and it's his home. So when he passes away, he'll be, at the start of the library or so. I don't know. Anyway. So
that really brings a new perspective into things and go a little later into the conversation, episode 3101.
Yeah. So he can't whistle because his tongue is made of cheese, and Jeff Pickles, Mr. Pickles, played by Jim, it just shows him how to whistle. So that's the scene that I'm supposed to be doing, and it's got three characters in it. There's no one here to help me to read the damn thing. And they want to see me, my face, my body, on screen as well as I'm puppeteering because it's a show within a show and you're bound to be seen at some point. So I do the thing and I do all three characters and different character voices, just bouncing between one and the other and the other. My big old sweaty head is in the shot and because I'm a perfectionist, so as much as I can. And so I ended up doing that audition. It must have been about anywhere from eight to 10 times to try to get it right. And then send it in, I sent in the final product and the rest is kind of history, man. So yeah, that's the road to get to Kidding. And then first day on the set was actually the first day that I got to handle Anhui. So I was super nervous because, sometimes your hand doesn't fit inside the puppet. I didn't know what he looked like. I had no idea what I was dealing with. So I got there 2.5 hours early and found the puppet wrangler. That's an actual job. So puppet wranglers will maintain or provide support to the puppeteer if things are going wrong or missing, or they have to troubleshoot, or they have to, at the last minute sew an appendage on, or whatever it might be, the puppet wrangler is there to do so. So I found our puppet wrangler, his name was Tomas, and he gave me Anhui, and there he and I on a lonely soundstage, because everyone else was off shooting their thing. We figured out, what's the best way to represent Anhui in this situation. And the first shot that you see in season one, where all of the puppets are behind Jeff, and he's talking about the loss of his son, and it's no spoiler because it's in the thing. That's the first shot that we did, and so when you see Anhui emoting or leaning into a shot or doing whatever he's doing, that's day one. That was basically 2 hours. That's such a heavy
scene to get into, considering the whole context of the show within a show,
how
it plays into everything going on in Jeff's life.
Yeah, always be ready, man. Yeah, and that's the thing. that I tell people. People all the time come up to me, and you know, folks from high school or college will email me and say, "Dude, you're so lucky. You're doing this. You're blah blah blah." And my response is, "Well, when you were out getting trashed, I was focused on this or whatever it is." And I sincerely believe that luck is the intersection of preparation and opportunity. That's all it is.
So if you
aren't ready, and if your tools aren't sharpened when opportunity shows up, the lucky day is the person who has been ready with many regards. So that's the way that I believe things work out. Now, you may say that there are a lot of folks out there who get gigs who aren't prepared for them. They will rise or they will fall by their own hand based on what they do. It's not about the person that got them there. Yeah, well, they know the producer, or they know this, or they know that. It's about the skill that they're bringing to it. And that's the wonderful thing about puppetry, is that I'm a 6 foot tall, 200 bald Latino man with a giant beard who can go in and audition for a French baguette or for a baby sea turtle or for whatever it is. And it's fantastic that I can get a part based on my skill, not on my looks.
And that is something that a lot of people need to realize, that is, like you say, it's not about looks. It's about how you do things and how you perform. Cause that goes well for me, you know, as someone who is in the arts, I'm a musician. So right, it depends on how good, you know, I play drums or how well I play keys.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, totally.
Make sure you send me a link to your music. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, sure. Totally.
Sweet.
So what was it like trying to develop the role of Anhui for the show?
I read early on, because my agent kind of tipped me in on it, that Michel Gondry, who did Eternal Sunshine and Signs of Sleep and you know, a bunch of just amazing films and videos, just creatively, he is the embodiment of what I call in-camera effect creation. And he's a wonderful man. He animates really well, and just a big admirer. So learning that he was one of the executive producers and probably directing, the week before, I ended up binge watching Michel's interviews. So 6 hours or so of Michel speaking and talking in French to and in English in interviews was the base for Anhui. And then wow. I started learning French on my own. I like popped out 5 different language apps because I wanted different perspectives on pronunciation and things like that. And don't edit this out of context, but how does a French tongue work in an American mouth? was the idea, because I didn't want to be a stereotype or a caricature of that. When I perform, I'm as honest as I can be in whatever I'm doing. And so I felt compelled to honor the French language and the French with being as spot on as possible. So I got to set, and I read the little part, because they were very small bits that they gave us. They weren't these fully fleshed out character, you know, bios that they gave us or anything like that. It was just Anhui stands there and he sings along with Jeff Pickles, with all the other, you know, all the other critters. And so I got there day one, and there's this little circle of us. And this is after I had met everyone. I had met, you know, Jim came up and introduced himself, I didn't have to seek him out. He came up and did the whole, like, hi, I'm Jim. Michelle came up and he introduced himself and Dave and all these guys. And so we're standing in this little circle. It's Michel Gondry, followed by, and I'm going counterclockwise, Michel Gondry, Ennui, with Ennui's hand on his shoulder, on Michel's shoulder. Then it's me puppeteering Ennui and syncing everything that Michel is saying. I'm replicating it. I'm syncing up to him so they can have an idea of what it sounds like if Michel's voice is coming out of his head, because the debate at this point is Michel going to do the voice or is it Dan? Then it's Jim, and then it's Dave Holstein. And we're debating this thing, whether it's going to happen or not, and Michel is opposed. You know, because Michel has this idol, like his vocal cords and his brain are like this supercharged Mustang, and he's always in idle when he's thinking. So when he's thinking of something, his voice basically does this as instead of and like you and I have, which is a terrible habit. He is in this idol. So he says, Jim, my voice is flat, not entertaining. We saw Dan. Let us trust what Dan can do. And Jim is like, no, we can do this. We can try that. And he finally agreed to, let's see what Dan can do. We've seen the audition. Seems like a funny dude. You know, and Dave was a huge proponent of let's just do this and see what happens. You know, we've seen Dan's audition. We think he's good. So I get there and do the thing. And Jim was a convert. Not that he was opposed to me doing it at all. But the idea was let's see if Michelle can do the voice. And so to his credit, he embraced it as well and went up and did it. And so ever since, you know, especially ramping up into production, I was using the five language apps, just immersing myself in French culture and studying French 3 hours a day, 7 days a week, so that I could be prepared and work through Ennui without the impediment of, am I saying it right? Am I not? It's more natural and it provides real character.
And it paid off.
Yeah, that's preparation. Oh, thank you.
It's one of the things that I really, really love about Kidding is how it built up, you know, the show within the show. You know, Jeff Pickles Puppet Time. Because you have clips where you see, oh, you know, it's Jeff Pickles' first year. This is how he created Astronaut, or this is how his legacy has impacted people. And I'm also a huge fan of Mr. Rogers, as you can probably tell.
Yeah.
Another thing that I love about the world within the show is that it doesn't come off as thinly veiled. It doesn't come off as making fun of Mr. Rogers as much as it does, you know, you guys are just paying homage to him and showing love to what he's done. While making it your own spin on things. And I love that.
Yeah, do you know why?
I do not.
So here's why. And this was not just for you, but also for the listeners. Gotta keep them engaged. Do you know why? So the reason why is if his show did not feel unique and genuine and tangible, then everything that Jeff says then loses its strength. So if he's one person on screen and as soon as the camera shut off, he turns into this giant raging asshole. Can I say that?
Oh yeah, no problem.
Leave me out. but if he turns into that when the cameras are off within the show, then he's not real, and nothing that he says in his personal life, you know, choose a why say a bad word when you can choose a good word, sort of a thing. All of that is null and void. So the genuine feeling of a children's show is because it has to be a children's show. And they brought in consultants. They brought in Joey Mazzarino, who is also one of the executive producers. He's a writer on the show. He wrote episode 3101, and he spent 25 plus years on Sesame Street as a puppeteer and as a writer. That's a headline.
Wow. Yeah, that is beautiful. Yeah, I can tell I recognize that name from somewhere. And yeah, once you said, oh, he worked on Sesame Street, then it like really hit me. The light bulb in my head went off, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, so that's where the authenticity comes, not only in Jim's portrayal, and beautiful portrayal, man.
Absolutely.
And it's so great because when we're there and we're playing around, the difference between Jeff and Jim is really, really evident. Jim is still extremely kind and extremely collaborative and all of the very conscious about things and knowledgeable about, he can see where the cameras know what lens they're using, and he knows exactly where to stand and what to do. It's just years and years and years of knowledge back there that he possesses in order to make things work. But as Mr. Pickles, he is as kind as you would imagine, interaction with Fred Rogers to be, and he listens, and it's pretty fantastic.
It's a real testament to Jim's talent, because of course I've been a fan of his for years, but watching him on Kidding and like giving this character like all the depth that he has is just mind-blowing. Like,
yeah, and it doesn't end with him. I mean, Judy is absolutely astonishing. Catherine Keener's
God, yeah, I love Catherine Keener on the show. Oh, she is the best.
One of my first interactions with her, and you know, I don't get starstruck a whole hell of a lot, but when it kicks in, you're kind of at a loss for words. But I went up to her and I said, Catherine, I just want you to know your acting choices are just so, and I was at a loss for words. And I said, just so weird. But no, like weird in a good way. Like, and then I had to, you know, extrapolate or unbox what I was trying to say with it. Frank Langella is just a powerhouse, man.
Yeah, he's really great at making you hate his character.
yeah, and still love and need him at the same time. You know, there's so much depth there. Cole and Juliet were just fantastic people. You know,
Cole and Juliet especially. They're the real breakout stars of the show, because they're doing a lot of crazy stuff on the show, especially Juliet. I love her character and all the edgy crazy shit she does. that kid needs a spinoff.
Yeah.
Showtime, if you're listening, give her spinoff.
So the show itself is authentic because of all of the elements. And that's all woven together by Dave. I mean, honestly, there's a huge team behind him, and production design and lighting and camera and all the people who do their jobs exceedingly well are all very kind people, and being able to go to work and I get home at the end of the day and my kids say, hey, how was work? And I said, and my answer is always the same. It wasn't. It was a joy. It was a pleasure to be there.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And if that were a place that I could, like, you know, like the old timers, go in and work there, you know, 5 days a week for the rest of my life, and then have a retirement party at the end of it, that would be the ideal job right there. Just working with these same people.
God, that's the job I want to have, you know, when I get older, you know, and like really figure out where I want to be in life. I do want to talk about episode 3101, which is season 2, episode 5 of Kidding. So what are your thoughts on that episode? What was it like working on that specific episode, considering how big a role Anhui had?
We were shooting at Disney Ranch. We were shooting. Really? We were shooting episode two. And that's all the forest stuff and all of that. And we had like a cool snake wrangler out there protecting us. And so we're doing all the outdoor stuff, you know, we're on Uyghurs running away, screaming obscenities at Jeff, which
another golden episode I want to add.
Yeah. And if you look close, this is a choice that I made and Dave approved. As Anhui is running away, his left hand, because I'm left-handed, his left hand is flipping the bird.
I noticed that. Yeah.
That's my little contribution to that.
It's the little things, guys. It's the little things that really make kidding what it is. And that's why you guys need to be watching it.
Absolutely. Oh man, I can't tell you how many people have hit me up on Twitter. Because I'm very active on Twitter, on Reddit, things like that, just promoting the show and talking to people, because people really truly want to connect. And you know, honestly, now is the time to be focused on people. I think always is the time to be focused on people, but right now it's the Burgess Meredith scene in Twilight Zone. You know, but now there was time, and you know, my glasses aren't broken, so that's a good thing. I get to be able to reach out to folks. But so many people say that kidding has, especially those episodes that we shot, have given them a sense of hope and healing, and that they aren't alone in the fact that they're alone, or that there was an ungluing. For those who have seen the episodes, how much can we actually give as far as spoilers and things like that? Or are we working around those?
I mean, yeah, spoiler warning for those who haven't watched the show, because I have a lot I want to say, and I'm sure Dan does as well. So
sure.
Pause here if you haven't seen Kidding. Go watch the first two seasons and then come back.
Yeah, especially because Showtime has like a free trial subscription. I think here in
there's no excuse.
Yeah, so you can check it out for free. Showtime, if you're listening, you can keep watching Showtime for the rest of your life, or if Showtime is not listening, you can cancel at the end of your subscription and not have to pay for more. But I prefer that you keep watching, because it helps all of us. Anyway, where the hell were we? Oh, yeah, we were at Disney Ranch. So Dave Holstein comes up to me, and he says, hey, man, what'd you think of episode 5? And I said, I love Star Wars. And he's like, no, the episode that we wrote. And I said, oh, I didn't get that. So he leaves, and he comes back, and all of a sudden there's a vibration in my pocket. And he says, read that tonight and let me know what you think. Cool. So at the end of the night, I ended up going to get a drink and some fries from a red-headed fast food establishment. And I'm sitting in the parking lot reading the script, and it must have been about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And people who were walking by my car checked in on me. Because tears are streaming down my face as I'm reading the script, and listening. And
rightfully so, because it's a very beautiful episode.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, I'm beside myself reading this. And then it hits me, oh, crap. A lot of this is on me. I have to be able to pull this off. And so the next day I got back to set, and I thanked Dave. He and I had a few words. And then I called up Joey, who had written the script. He had a Joey Mazzarino. And I said, dude, you are a monster. And I don't know why you've given this to me. And I hate you, because I'll never be able to write as good as you did. I'll do my best to actually. And before I can get the words out, he cuts me off and he says, Dan, if I didn't think that you were a fantastic puppeteer and an amazing actor, I wouldn't have written this for you. Which he says, you'll be fine. Which is a great blessing from his part, but a huge burden on mine. And I took it and I made it my own. And I'm all about truth and acting. And the reason it hit me so hard is because, you know, I'm portraying Ennui as the child of divorce. And that's what I was when I was a kid growing up.
Oh God!
And so you think all of these things and you have all of these things and you get older and you have a family of your own. And my wife and I've been married for 25 years. We've got two amazing kids. And so I don't know what it feels like to be the catalyst or the one of the participants in the divorce, but I sure as hell know what shrapnel feels like. And as a performer, I had to go in and open up those old boxes and crack open those old scars and be as honest and as truthful as possible, all the while being a little French baguette who's at the end of his rope. So that's kind of where the truth comes in on me, with Ennui.
Yeah, and like you said, that resonated with a lot of people who saw the episode, because I remember specifically after watching the episode, I went to Reddit to check the comments like I always do, and the amount of people who said, hey, you know, I know how this feels. Like, this episode really resonated with me. And I, as someone who isn't really a child of divorce, but has been through a lot of hardships with my parents and everything, it resonated with me too, like especially Deirdre's song, for example, in the episode, because she, again, props to Catherine Keener, she is fucking amazing as an actress.
And Alan Schmuckler, who wrote the songs, composed the music, just astonishing insight. Please go on.
Yeah, but God, just I love that. That episode is easily my favorite of the season. Next to the season finale, of course.
Yeah. So 3101, and the way that it breaks down, for those of you who don't know how things are written, 31 represents season 31, 01 represents the episode number. So it's season 31, episode 1 of Mr. Pickle's Puppet Time, because he's been on for 31 years in the premise of the show. That's why it's called what it's called. And who the hell hasn't been through some form of ungluing? It resonates with people because there's the underlying truth of, I want this to work out so well. I want this to be perfect. I want everybody to be happy. And sometimes it isn't, and sometimes it can't. And we get to see the relationships falling apart from two different perspectives. One out of infidelity, and the other one out of devastation and separation and trying to bury yourself in work. So that it doesn't hurt as much, you know. And I think that was brilliant, being able to see it from two different perspectives.
And of course, you also had Ariana Grande to help out with the situation too. So what was that? I know, what a transition, right?
No pressure, man. So we were on set, and we were there for about a week ahead of time, because there's a lot of choreography, and they brought in Mandy Moore, who is the choreograph expert for so many films, but most notably for La La Land. Ooh, and what? She, wow. Yeah. She is showing us, okay, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to work this out, we're going to do this. So, it's like John Hammond at Jurassic Park, but the ending is much better. They spared no expense and brought in people who really are amazing at what they do. And so we're doing the song and the dance, and they gave us these preliminary tracks, and scratch tracks basically, of Alan singing all of the characters. And then there was a girl who was singing what later becomes, she's Pica LeGrande, which later becomes Ariana doing it. And every time I'd listen to the track, I would break down in tears. Her voice was just that clear and that crisp and that, you know, her vocal cords are certainly attached to her heart. And and they hit mine every time. And so I said to Alan, because we didn't know who was coming in. I said, so who's the one that's singing this, and when do we get to meet and work with her and all of that? And they looked at each other and they said, oh, you guys don't know? I said, no, no, no. I said, all right, well, everyone has signed NDAs. So Ariana Grande is coming in and she'll be with us as Piccolo. And
what a bombshell.
Everybody's jaws dropped. And then
can you blame
he looked over at me and I looked over at him and I said, wait a second, I'm going to be singing with Ariana. And so, it went from there. And she was absolutely delightful. Absolutely wonderful. I grew up as a kid in a recording studio. My father lived in Mexico, and every summer I'd go with him, and basically the microphone and a 2-inch tape were my babysitter. So he would lock me up in
one of those. What a babysitter.
Yeah, no kidding, right? and I learned how to do multi-track recording, and I would write these things out, and I would ask myself questions and answer, and started developing, you know, characters and voices to differentiate. And we had a lot of musicians who would come in and they'd sound absolutely horrible. And then he would fix it in post, with effects. And I said, how much, you know, that part of my brain was like, how much of it's hype and how much of it is her? How much is really in that person's, in that woman's skill level? And she comes in and she's very, very cordial and really funny. And, she's fantastic. And she squats down at one point beside me. It's a scene that we're going to be shooting. And she's going, there's no one else listening, no one else watching. So it's not for show or for, you know, it's no peacocking or anything like that. And she starts going through her riffs and her runs and her scales in a whisper. And I'm just shocked.
Chills.
It was crazy. And when she finished, you could tell when she was done with her prep. I looked over at her. And with ennui in my hands, I said, "Your mouse makes music." And she said, "What?" And she kind of giggled. And I said, "There is music coming from your mouse. It is beautiful. I did not believe in Pico LeGrande until today." And she laughed and she stood up and she yelled out, "Ennui's got it going on. And if I have a love interest in season 4, it's him." So we all laughed, and she's really, really, really a skilled artist. And that skill, people always say, "Oh man, you're so talented. I wish I had that." Talent is raw and visceral and a great starting point. But skill takes sacrifice, and it takes dedication, and it takes screwing up and failing time after time after time until you get it right. And I can honestly say that Ariana Grande is an extremely skilled vocalist and performer.
And you know what? You're absolutely right. She is incredible. She is, like you said, a powerhouse. A performer
and she's not a very tall person, so the fact that that she doesn't allow height or size or anything like that to restrict what anyone thinks about her, especially herself, is I think a lesson for many people who say, well, I've never been able to do that or whatever. On a personal note, I'm a puppeteer. I dedicate most of my life to sticking my hand inside of some sort of a furry fabric or whatever it might be, or sculpted whatever. And I was born with a birth defect. So one of my hands is smaller than the other hand, and notably so. And so we can either lean in to the what we call a disability, or you can put your foot down and say that what you have is this ability to do that, this ability to connect. If I hadn't grown up being bullied or seeking empathy or compassion, then I wouldn't know how valuable those things are, and how valuable those things are to deliver or to give to someone else. People a lot of times don't know how to react to sincerity and compassion and love. And yeah, that's because it's uncomfortable to them, because maybe they didn't freely receive it as a kid, or they didn't thirst for it. But when you're thirsty for something like that, the opportunity, when your bag that you have your satchel is full of that, is to pass it out as freely as you can. And I think it's the obligation of the individual to decide whether they're going to step up or they're going to sit back. And if you sit back in the shadows, you are robbing the world of the unique person that you are. So step up and do it, man. You're built in a very special way for a very special reason, and there's someone out there who wants to connect. So make it happen, you know?
Wow. just wow. I'm still trying to process all of that, because that is the most inspiring thing I have ever heard in working as a podcaster for over 2 years now. So wow.
Just, well,
so
that, you can take that for you, or you can, you know, pass it on to your listeners, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. So we're going to wrap up in a second, but before we do that, I just want to ask, what advice do you have for creatives who are stuck at home during the COVID pandemic?
Consider it a time to find who you really are. Are you the person who made the excuse all through the years leading up to this particular quarantine, saying, "Oh man, I wish I had the time," or making excuses for yourself because you're afraid of failing, or the dream is more real than the possibility of you being rejected or failure. The only way that you'll ever know if you're good enough is to fail enough not to be, and to use that as the fire in your belly to go forward. I have so many projects that I work on from time to time, and I find myself, and this is convicting for me especially, am I going to binge watch Tiger King, or am I going to create something? My grandfather would always pull the car over when I was a kid. When he'd pick me up, I was in elementary school. When he had something important to say, he'd pull his vehicle over, a gold Camaro was his car for my grandfather. So he was he's something else. He's still around. Nacho. Nacho is a great guy.
Hi, Nacho, if you're listening.
Hey, Nacho. Yeah. I actually got to base one of my characters off of him on a children's series I did for PBS called Splash and Bubbles, and he's the father of 500 seahorses.
Wow.
And so I got to honor him with that. But he'd pull the car over whenever there was something important to say. And my little six-year-old, seven-year-old brain trying to process what he's saying. So one day he does, and he says, "Mijo, there are three kinds of people in this world. They're the kind of people that make great things happen. They're the kind of people that watch great things happen. And they're the kind of people that don't know what the heck just happened." And I laughed. And then he stares down into my heart and he says, "Your job is to pick one. Who are you?" And not wanting to let down a man who stepped in when I didn't have a father and became this father figure for me, a strong Latino man who taught me so much. You don't want to disappoint your idols, you know? And
yeah, said, exactly.
I want to make great things happen. Okay. And he started driving. And in my life, I've discovered that any time during my day, in a hopeless or seemingly hopeless, powerless situation, I can choose to be any one of those three people. I can be a person who sits back and watches what's going on, watching things happen. I can binge watch things on my television. I can inactively watch what's happening in the situation politically or, ecologically or ethically, morally in this world. I can be a person who sits back when all hell is breaking loose and admit, I don't know what the hell is happening. I don't know. And there's power in that. There's power in taking control and making the decision. I honestly don't know what the hell is happening because it's choice. Or
yeah.
I can be the person who says, this isn't going to be the end of me. This isn't who I am supposed to be. I may have failed and screwed up consistently throughout my life, but right now and today, I'm taking the charge and I'm going to make great things happen. And it doesn't have to be monumental. It can be something as simple as saying, no, I'm not going to, I don't know, if you're trying to quit smoking, I'm not going to take that cigarette today or right now. I'm not taking that cigarette right now, or I'm not going to take that drink, or I'm not going to lick that frog, or I'm not going to, whatever your thing may be. You can say that. I still find myself in a place that I find the most control in my uncontrollability, especially when it comes to food. Food is comforting. I would imagine there would be some sort of a picture you'll have up there of me, but I am not a small man, and so there are times that I honestly need to take charge and I need to take control. And I need to make great things happen or small things happen in my life, and I don't. It's not to say that the advice is wrong or inherent or inert, but it is something that I need to follow myself. But I chose to make great things happen in my own life, at least in my little world, and at least I think they're kind of cool and great. So I think that those would be my words of wisdom, leaving anyone who wants to create, pick up, screw up, do it wrong over and over and over until it's good. And
and that goes for anybody. It goes for me. Yeah. It goes for whoever's listening to this right now.
Yeah.
Just create. Just do something. You know.
Anything. Anything. It doesn't even have to be creative. I mean, there is creativity in there's creativity in science, technology, math. There's everything has a creative component in it. Not everyone is going to follow the same pattern of what's already been done. I mean, forge ahead. Find what are you good at? What do you do in your spare time? What does the world need? Put those three things together and find your path in life. Do your thing, man. Forge ahead.
Yeah, like I've had plenty of moments as, you know, a musician where, you know, I've just felt like, you know, it's been a while since I did this. Maybe I should get back into it. But at the same time, I might not be as good at it. I might not be good enough. And that is a toxic way of thinking. You shouldn't feel like that about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you believe in yourself enough to do something, then do it.
And along the way, be kind. I mean, yeah. Be kind to all of the people that are around you, because I've had so many opportunities, and this isn't like be nice because people will help you out. No, it's be kind because we're all human and we're all in this thing at the same time. And be kind to yourself. It's okay to, when I'm on set and my other puppeteer colleagues will tell you, I beat the hell out of myself when I'm on set. If I'm not getting the performance that I want, I am absolutely the most vile person to myself, not to the people around me, but to me. Super harsh. But be kind to yourself and learn that you're valuable. You have something to offer. And there is nothing wrong with getting it wrong. Get it wrong and move on.
And it's clear to me that the advice that your grandfather gave to you is still resonating with you to this day, because the advice you gave me was just incredible. Dan, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Is there anything you want to plug while you're here?
If anyone has like a hair restoration club or anything like that, they want to enroll me in, I'm completely up for it. But other than that, we do have some fun projects on the horizon. Stay in contact. I'm on Twitter at @OUTTAPEZ. That's @OUTTAPEZ, because I used to collect Pez dispensers or a long, long time ago. On Twitter, you can find me on Instagram under the same at @OUTTAPEZ, or my art stuff at outapez.com. At @OUTTAPEZ_art. And then my website is dangarzacreative.com.
All right. Well, once again, Dan, thank you so much. And one more thing for the listeners at home, please, for the love of God, watch Kidding. If you have not seen Kidding yet, I can't tell you what you guys are missing out on. This show is probably one of my favorite shows that's on TV right now. And hell, it's currently in, I don't want to say it's in limbo at the moment, but you know, if you watch a show and you fall in love with it like I did, tweet #RenewKidding, because this show deserves a third season. I can't tell you guys how much of a masterpiece this show is.
And if you don't, it will break my heart. My heart is cheesy, and my soul is on the bottom of my feet.
And please. See, you don't want to break Anhui's heart, guys. You just can't.